I don't think that we should go out anymore. I mean, I just think it's over.
Okay, it's over again.
No, not again. This is it. This is the last time. It's for real. You've heard of a no-win situation, haven't you?
No.
Really, no? You've never heard of one? Vietnam? This?
After Robert broke up with the girl of his dreams...
Don't call me either, okay?
Stop, Dad!
Very sweet, thanks.
He was single.
There's 10 million people in this city alone. How difficult can it be to find one perfect person? It's not that big a deal.
He was free.
A call, Mr. Popularity. Mr. Popularity, hello.
He took vitamins.
You broke up with somebody.
Uh-huh.
You're gonna need C, magnesium.
He started running.
One, two, three, I don't even miss her. Two, three.
He started dating.
Ellen, out of the past. Ellen, Petey, Ellen.
He had everything a modern guy could want.
Robert Cole, everything you do from this moment on will only make you feel better.
He felt awful.
I'm alone now. I don't want a quaalude. What am I going to do, hug myself? Please, I don't... Okay. Got another one?
Columbia Pictures presents a film by Albert Brooks, Modern Romance.
What are you doing here?
You're going out on a date, aren't you?
Robert, I'm closing the door.
Okay. You two didn't get along. You said it yourself. All you ever did was fight. So who is he? You slept with him? Twice?
I'm going home.
All right, hold it. That's all we ever did. I'm telling you, we fought, and then we had great sex. We never really could talk.
Yesterday you told me you didn't want to see me.
Cheap talk. I love you very much, Mary.
I know you do.
Oh, I know you do. I guess that's the same as I love you too. Sure.
Welcome back to the Film and Water Podcast, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and joining us once again is our pal, Max Romero. Hello, Max.
Hey, Rob.
Very happy to have you here because we are talking about one of my favorite movies of all time, and that is Albert Brooks's Modern Romance from 1981. It is a movie that I have talked about many times before on the show. I call it a masterpiece, and that's a big word. But I think this movie is a masterpiece. It's a tiny masterpiece. It's 95 minutes or so. Its ambitions seem rather small. You know, when you think of the word masterpiece, you know, you think of Lawrence of Arabia or Casablanca, right, or Pulp Fiction. But this, I think this movie is literally unparalleled in what it's trying to go for. I need to start my thoughts on this movie at the end, and specifically a comment that Sony Pictures, Columbia Pictures, got from a test screening from, from somebody who saw this movie at a test screening, and their comment was, "This guy's got a Porsche and a good-looking girl. What's his problem?" Now,
well, you know, that is a fair question.
I mean, I think that is the ultimate existential problem of Albert Brooks's as a character, is that the man is never happy. This movie, he plays Robert Cole, a film editor, and he works with Bruno Kirby, his assistant editor, and he has a girlfriend, Mary Harvard, who works in banking. She's played by the great Catherine Harold. And as the movie opens, They get a meal together at a diner, and he talks about that they need to break up again. And just in this opening scene, it already has one of, to me, the finest, funniest lines in the history of all of cinema, which is where he says, and it's in the trailer, I think we're in a no-win situation. Have you ever heard of a no-win situation? And she says, no. Really? You've never heard of no-win situation? Vietnam? This? I think that is like one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life. So they break up, and over the sounds of Joe Cocker's You Are So Beautiful to Me, she tells him to drop dead. Mm-hmm. And they split up, and then they spend the next 90 minutes getting back together, breaking up, getting back together. This movie is a killer. So Max, I need to ask you. First of all, I have to thank you so much for coming on to talk about this movie, because, like I said, I love this movie. I don't know too many people that have seen it, so I'm kind of like a real advocate, you know, like a humorless advocate for this thing. I'm just like, does everybody see this movie? And after you mentioned when you were on the Defending Your Life episode that you're a fan of Albert Brooks, I was like, oh, this will be perfect, because so, you know, I actually love this movie. So when did you first see Modern Romance?
Oh, gosh. I must have seen it probably, I don't think I saw it on, I don't think I saw it in the theater, but I'm pretty sure I saw it for the first time on VHS, which probably would have been, I was still pretty young, so I was, it probably was a couple of years after it had come out, or a year or so.
Wow, you must have been pretty young then.
Yeah, I was, this came out in 81, so I must have been 12 or 13.
Okay, all right.
When I saw it, and a lot of it, of course, just went right over my head.
Right, because this is, you're pre-relationships at that point.
Right.
Unless you were a real humdinger, I'm going
to
assume.
Well, I don't like to brag, Rob.
Max Romero, knee-deep in tail at 12 years old.
Yeah, I was rejected by the best, Rob. You know, and that's one of the things that's so great about Albert Brooks and about this movie in particular. You know, you mentioned that it was, you called it a masterpiece, and it is a masterpiece, but it's a masterpiece of awkwardness.
Mm-hmm.
And you, personally speaking, I know that I could identify with Albert Brooks.
Oh, yeah.
From beginning to end, but about halfway through the movie, you realize this is not a good guy. this is not a good look for Albert Brooks, you know, because at first, you know, the movie starts with them breaking up and he's heartbroken. And within like 24 hours, he goes through all these different regimens to try to, you know, be healthy. And I'm over her. And by that night, he's already leaving stuffed animals on her doorstep.
I love and the giraffe.
The giraffe. I love the giraffe. And, you know, all that is very familiar, but then about halfway through the movie, it kind of switches tracks a little bit, and you see how obsessive Robert is, and it's unfortunately also something I can identify with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, but that's great, and it's so raw and so, and at times hard to watch, that it's, you know, it really is. And I think we said this about Defending Your Life. There's a lot more than you think there is going on in this movie.
That is my number one thing I think about when I want to compliment this movie. And I think all of Albert Brooks's movies up until Mother are pretty much perfect. I mean, Real Life, Modern Romance, Lost in America, Defending Your Life, and Mother, I think are, maybe Mother is a little, like a half step behind those other four, but I actually think those other four movies are nearly perfect. And right. No one is better at painting an image of Albert Brooks as a needy prick than Albert Brooks.
Yeah.
Albert Brooks himself is great. I mean, he plays such a self-centered a-hole in real life that you just can't believe he would subject himself to this kind of scrutiny, and yet he does. He is merciless on himself in these movies.
He is, and it's rough because he's, you know, it's, you know, like you were saying about that comment. You know, he has everything. And then he has the car, he has the woman, he has what looks to be a great job. I mean, he's meeting George Kennedy at a party.
You know nothing.
we need to talk about those footsteps too at some point. But those, you know, it's. Everything bad that happens to him is completely self-inflicted. Completely self-inflicted. And he just is his own worst enemy. Every chance he has for happiness, he finds a way to screw it up.
That is why I relate way too much to this character. I mean, part of the reason I think that Modern Romance, above even the other films, is again, I've used that word, masterpiece, is because I think His visual style as a director is very simple. Everything looks kind of like, basically like you would see in a, you know, 1980s kind of mid-budget rom-com. You know, there's nothing visually terribly exciting going on here, but the way he is playing with the form of what we know about movies is that to me is what is brilliant. Is because the whole way this movie was marketed. I mean, the poster has them hugging on the, you know, on the poster, and it's got like heart around it. I mean, God, poor Columbia Pictures when they got this movie. They must have been like, "What the hell are we supposed to do with this thing?" But the form of this movie, and it's the way it's shot, the way the music is used, its length suggests a romantic comedy, and the movie because it is simply presenting our two main characters, the way, you know, this is a man and a woman, you kind of instinctively want them to get together because that's what you're presumably here to see, right? Is this thing. But yet he keeps subverting that in every way, because as the movie goes on, you learn these two people should not be together.
Oh God, no.
They are toxic for one another, and not toxic in a like a thriller way, you know, where like they want to kill each other or it's something, you know, obviously dramatic, like War of the Roses, you know, where they where their hatred has curdled into violence. It's just this passive aggressive thing where neither one of them can quite quit the other. Mm-hmm. And they should. They should not be anywhere near one another. And right. The fact that Brooks, as Robert Cole, cannot get past that, that is the part to me it digs under your skin. And I have, to me, part of the way this movie works is depends on when you see it. Because I think if you see this movie for the first time when you're in a happy relationship, I don't think the movie is going to be as effective. Mm. But I think if you see it when you're single or you've been in a relationship where you've broken up with somebody and right. you recognize little bits of your personality, this movie cuts to the bone. Mm-hmm. And that is the part – I mean, look, there are parts in this movie where I was like, holy shit, that's me. And I don't like seeing that, you know, but I couldn't help but recognize some parts of it. And yet the way Brooks structures this movie – it's structured like a comedy act because, of course, mm-hmm. Albert Brooks was a comedian. Or, I don't know if anybody doesn't know. He started out as a comedian. He was a regular on The Tonight Show. He was a stand-up comedian. He had comedy records ever before he got to make a movie. In fact, in real life, his 1979 movie, he literally goes on to a dissertation about how you construct a comedy act. Right. You know, he's like, you got an opening, and then you got a hunk, and then you got an 8-minute hunk, and then you got a thing. And yet this movie is constructed like that, because after he breaks up with Mary in the opening scene, then we get all these different sequences, and there's a whole bunch of stuff about him being a film editor, which, yeah, we have to get to. Hulk screaming. We have to get to that. And at first you think, well, this stuff doesn't have anything really to do with the relationship. Mm-hmm. But it does, because one of the things I love about his characters in all of his movies is that for the most part, Albert Brooks' character is most of the time is kind of right. It's the world that's against him. And he recognizes it, and the film itself recognizes it. Because the scenes we see with him as a film editor, he's actually a pretty good editor.
Right.
You know, I mean, James L. Brooks is in this movie playing a nebbishly B-movie director, which is great. Another thing of him getting somebody to make fun of himself. Right. And they're making this horrible Z-grade sci-fi movie starring George Kennedy. And there's this extended sequence where Robert Cole and Bruno Kirby's character, Jay, they decide they're going to re-edit this sequence featuring George Kennedy. And, you know, I think from pretty much any objective level, the version they come up with is better.
Mm-hmm.
It's genuinely better. And then they show it to the director, James L. Brooks, and he just argues and argues and argues. And then, you know, basically Cole makes his case, and then there's this pause, and the director goes, yeah, but let's put it back to the way we did it. And Robert folds immediately. He's like, okay, fine.
Right, and the whole reason the director is there in the first place is because he wants to have metallic footsteps.
Right.
Even though he's on a carpeted hallway. That's a whole other thing. But, what's interesting about that, too, and, I don't want to make it sound like this is some depressing movie, because it's funny throughout.
It's funny as hell, yeah.
It is funny throughout the whole thing, but it's uncomfortable as hell. But the only time Robert seems happy is when he's working.
Right.
You know, and when he is supposed to be happy, when, in his everyday life with his, beautiful girlfriend, he finds every single way to spin it out of control.
Yeah, I mean, it's they have a nice chemistry with the two of them, and there's a great moment where when they get back together and they go to bed together, and he gives a line to her about, "I'd search the world to find you, and if I couldn't find you, I'd find someone and tell them about you." And she Catherine Harold puts this great little sultry purr in her voice where she says, "Sometimes you say the nicest things." And you could tell in that moment, this is kind of – she's charmed by him. And then, of course, he can't help but ruin it, because then he says, well, that actually was from a movie. That's from Easy Rider. Right. Like, just shut up, dude. Just shut up. Stop talking.
But it's not even from a romantic – I don't think there are any romantic parts in that movie. But, it's one of the characters talking to a cop.
Right.
So it's just – I think there's you mentioned earlier about the line about you mentioned that line earlier, and there's a line before that when he says, "I do love," when they're breaking up, and he says, "I do love you, but love has nothing to do with it." And I think, that encapsulates the movie so well, because Albert Brooks in this movie, Robert Cole, his character, obviously does not know anything about love. For him, love is this very obsessive, selfish thing. And when he says love has nothing to do with it, he's pretty right on, because love has nothing to do with his behavior in any of the rest of the movie.
Right. I mean, after he breaks up with Mary the first time, he completely folds when he goes back to the editing room and Jay says, you know, he says to Jay, we never could talk. We would fight and fight and fight and then have great sex. And then Jay is like, you need to talk? And it's just like he's undercut by every. And then he takes a phone call. There's so many phone call scenes in this movie, which is, to me, you know, that's such a comedic staple of comedy albums is the phone call. And Bob Newhart, you know, made a whole career out of doing the phone call gags. There's so many funny phone calls in this movie. And every movie has funny phone calls from Albert Brooks. There's something about hearing the disembodied voice. That is really funny. But when somebody calls Robert for a job recommendation about who's doing the assistant editing on that Schlesinger picture, and then the guy says, you know, you're really lucky that you're with Mary. And he's like, well, we broke up. And then the guy immediately turns to, can I call her? And Brooks just loses it at that point. And of course, that's the whole scene where he's high on lewds.
Right.
Which is
and he's already drunk dialed a woman he can't remember.
Right, yeah. That's right. There might be love here. There might be love. I didn't even think you liked me. Oh, come on.
I have a lot of love for you, Ellen. I have a lot of love for you.
I have a lot of love for you. I'm going to take you out tomorrow. Ellen, this could be serious. And that whole scene is like a good 10-minute chunk of an uninterrupted, no cuts, and it's just him on a horrible drug trip. And I love that when he calls Jay – and he's like, Jay, I just want to call and say, I love you, man. And then there's this pause, and you hear Jay say, the lewds kicked in. And he's like, the lewds kicked in. I just want to say, I love you, man. Now, come on. And he says, you took the lewds? Because yeah, I took them both. And then there's another pause. You took them both? And then, of course, he wants to order more lewds. Can I get more lewds? Yeah, I guess so. How many do you want? 100. 100 lewds? It's just like...
I'll pay for them.
Like, yeah. I mean, the way that Robert Cole, again, the way he folds on himself so quickly, again, is the scene where he goes back to the editing room for the first time, and he talks to Jay about that he broke up with Mary, and he's like, you know what? He's like, let's get into it. Let's do some work. Let's do the best work of our careers. That'll make me forget her. Yeah, perfect, perfect. And Jay is all like, yeah, let's do it. And he hands him the film cans, and he holds them for what? 2 seconds? And then he's like, I can't do this. I'm not that kind of person. I can't work. I have to go home. All of his convictions just immediately fly out the door the minute he meets them with any resistance at all. And it's like, again, that is painful to watch because I feel like I see some of myself in there. And that's the part. Now, luckily, I don't think I'm as self-destructive as Robert. But man, and the other thing too is like when I was talking about the way this movie is constructed like a comedy album, that it's got hunks that sort of exist independently of each other. When he goes to the fitness store.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. I mean, first of all, the guy running the fitness store is Super Dave Osborne, who is Albert Brooks's real-life brother. And the way that this guy sizes up Robert Cole in an instant and knows he can bilk this guy.
Right.
And the whole bit about, you know, you're going to run. Here's some, you know, I just broke up with somebody and I believe I'm going to start a new life and running needs to be a major part of it.
Yeah. And that's a major thing. I mean, I'm sure you probably noticed, but every single person that Robert Cole runs into, the first thing he tells them is, I just broke up with someone.
He even tells the garage attendant when he's going into the parking lot, I just broke up with somebody. I'll just be a second. Like, why are you telling this person this? When he meets when the muscle guy talks to him and he's and even the tiny microaggressions in there where he says where he gets out the tracksuits and he says I'm 6'4", what are you 5'11"? And Robert Cole goes I'm 6 foot, like just that little dig of like you're only 5'11". He says okay, you're gonna buy a suit that's $75. Oh, that's too much money. Oh, all right, I misjudged you. I'm not perfect. By the box, you'll be happy. He's like, no. Buy. So he sells him two suits. And then he ends up, you know, Robert Cole ends up probably spending like $1,000 on running equipment.
At least.
And then we cut to him running. And how long does his running regimen last?
Oh, God. I think he runs maybe 10 steps right to a payphone to call Mary.
I don't even miss her. I don't even miss her. And then, 10 seconds later, I miss her. It's just like... oh, you're just like, God almighty, this poor bastard, you know? Mm-hmm. He's just so unfortunate. And then he goes out on the date with the girl that he called under in his lose haze. That scene is brutal because it's all, again, one shot where he picks her up and he puts on the radio. And, of course, we hear Michael Jackson's, She's Out of My Life.
She's Out of My Life, yeah.
And on that one shot, he literally just drives in a giant circle and drops the girl off.
And they never talk the entire time.
No. Oh, it's just so awkward. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's a tight shot of them in the car. The music is playing. You can see the traffic behind him in the streets. He's making turns. They don't say anything to each other, which is uncomfortable as it is. And then he pulls in for a long shot, and he pulls up in front of her house and basically drops her off.
He pushes her. He doesn't even get out of his car. He basically pushes her out. I had a great time. Maybe we'll go away for a weekend sometime. And one of the nice little details I think that Brooks as a director leaves is that after Robert Cole pulls away, the camera holds on that woman for like an extra beat. And you just sort of watch her dejectedly walk back into her house. And you're just like, oh, my God. You know what I mean? Like, and again, I know I'm making this movie sound like a real depressing trip. And it isn't, because it is so ridiculously hilarious. But I love that he gives it that extra just – the idea of – it reminds me – I mean, look, Albert Brooks has been compared many times to Woody Allen. You know, he's the L.A. Woody Allen, which I think is a very reductive way of looking at Albert Brooks' filmography. But, you know, the line in Woody Allen – the line in Annie Hall, which is the whole thing about, you know, relationships are like, you know, the chickens. You know, it's ridiculous and whatever, and but we need the eggs. And it's like that to me is – that's – Albert Brooks is sort of saying that here. It's like – all these people are trying to just find one another, and it's utter misery, but yet you're going to keep doing it because you kind of have to.
Yeah, you know? And I think it's also a good way of showing the effect that Robert has on everyone around him.
Yes.
And it's and how oblivious he is to that, you know, including especially Mary, because Mary is difficult to watch because she's likable, she's smart, she's beautiful, but at the same time, like you said, she cannot say no to Robert, and he treats her like crap. He's so manipulative and so selfish and so needy, but she goes back to him every single time.
Yeah.
And that is hard to watch, because she knows how bad he is for her. I don't think he knows how bad he is for her. You know, I think he kind of thinks like, oh, this is just – he keeps saying this is love. This is how love works, or I do this because I love you, which is icky to hear, because, you know, that's what, you know, emotional and you know, abusers say. I do it because I love you. But she falls for it every time, and it's difficult. It's a little icky.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, one of the very minor criticisms I've read of this movie is that Catherine Harold's character of Mary isn't given, like, a whole lot of development. I mean, we never see her outside of any scenes with Albert Brooks. But I think that that's part of the point, is that this movie is about Robert Cole's obsession, not so much about her. We don't really need to know why she can't seem to quit him. I mean, she's a beautiful woman. Catherine Harold looks gorgeous in this movie. There's that great moment where they get up after the next morning after they've slept together, and she's in that great dress.
Right.
And he's like, we need to do some sewing. You gotta put another dress. Your breasts look like eyeballs. And then I love when she leaves the house, and he's like, there's people out there that rape. That's all they do.
Like, okay then.
Yeah, she completely ignores him. But to me, it's like, so it doesn't bother me that we don't get her as a fully developed character, because in my eyes, the movie's not about that. It's not about their relationship. It's about his obsession with the relationship. And so, therefore, it's perfectly fair that she's a lesser role, because he is – I mean, Robert Cole is literally – I mean, everybody has heard that phrase about, you know, you're the star of your own movie. Mm-hmm. Robert Cole is so the star of his own movie.
Oh, yeah.
And she is just the romantic interest. And so it doesn't bother me that we don't get a full picture of her.
Well, and I would say also, because, you know, obviously there's a lot of almost like monologuing with Albert Brooks's character, and especially with the phone stuff and, you know, all those sort of things when he's high on Quaaludes and he decides he's going to go somewhere. I don't even remember where he's supposed to, where he thinks he's going, but he falls asleep in his car and all that stuff. You know, even though she is not there, she is physically, she is still a presence in every scene, because everything that he does, everything he's thinking, you know, everything he talks about has to do with her. And so even though she's not necessarily physically in every scene, I think as a presence and as a character, she's there throughout.
I agree with that entirely. I mean, there is a certain amount of it's hard to say exactly, because we don't see a whole lot of other people in this world. It's a fairly small movie in terms of the characters we run into, but Mary seems to really be kind of have it going on, and we hear a lot about other guys are like that Mary, oh boy. Yeah. And you get the sense that Robert is kind of punching above his weight.
Oh yeah,
a little,
for sure.
And
yeah,
a little. Well, I mean, he's a successful film editor. It's not like he's a loser, but at the same time, I mean, I'll admit, I was in a relationship once where I was really out of my depth and, ate away at me because I knew, I would go out with this person and we would go places and I would see guys taking looks at her, and it bothered me because it underscored my insecurity, And I mean, if I had been confident and it had the confidence of just being able to say, well, she's with me. Obviously, there's something to me that she sees that even I'm not seeing, because she's with me, not with those guys. And yet it still ate away at me. And that's part of the reason I find this movie so compelling, is that if Robert would just relax and be in the moment with her, he'd be so much happier. But he can't. He lets all that stuff eat away. I mean, the idea of, the dress that she wears, or even when he calls her at the bank. And of course, we get the running gag of the name of the bank is Fidelity.
Right.
And every time you hear somebody say Fidelity, and he just goes, Fidelity. even the tiny. And then when he calls her another time, and some guy answers, and you hear the guy hand the phone over to Mary, and he goes, wow, that's some dress. All that stuff just digs away at him. And it's like, this is a guy with a nice house. He's got a good job as a film editor. He's clearly good at what he does. I mean, I think the guy in that comment card, the what's his problem, is missing the point of the movie a little bit. But at the same time, he does have a point. Why is this guy so miserable?
Yeah. Well, and there's a part he's shaving and he finds her phone bills.
Oh, yeah.
And finds a couple of, what he thinks are suspicious long-distance charges.
Right. Who's she calling in New York at 11 o'clock at night?
Right. And there's a great line that kind of goes to what you're saying, because he says, no, I'm not going to worry about it. It's probably just someone she's having sex with.
Yeah.
And his mind immediately goes there. And this is the morning after they have made up.
Yeah.
And so, within hours, he's already picking this relationship apart. And it's incredible. It's incredible how his own neuroses just erodes at what he has.
Yeah. And just, again, in the way that the world, the world to me, the way that the world that Albert Brooks's movies construct for themselves, the world is against him in a lot of ways. I think the world's against him in Defending Your Life. The world's against him in Lost in America. But it's his response to it. And there's a couple of things again, specifically, we talk about the scene where he goes to – there's a scene where the director, James L. Brooks, says we need to do some audio dubbing of George Kennedy's footsteps. Because we see the scene where he's running, and I love how cheap the movie looks. I love it. Because it looks like George Kennedy looks like he's in Far Out Space Nuts or something. It's so cheap looking. And they have to redub the footsteps because he's like, we need to honk, 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 you know. And that's even that moment, it's where Albert Brooks is completely missing the mark, because he's trying to sell James L. Brooks on the director on this new cut.
Right.
And then it's
about something else completely. Yeah.
After he's already dismissed the director's ideas about the footsteps. So it's like, well, maybe if you had gone along with what James L. Brooks had just told you, he'd be more receptive to your idea. But he doesn't do that. So anyway, then he goes to this scene where they have to do some Foley editing. And I've never seen a movie that actually shows the nuts and bolts of making a movie like this. I mean, for people who don't work inside the movie industry, it seems so romantic. Mm-hmm. And this scene, this extended scene, which you can find on YouTube, of them having to redub the footsteps, it makes making movies look like hell on earth.
Right.
Because the audio guys could not give less of a fuck about their jobs or what Albert Brooks and Bruno Kirby have to do. And they just don't. In fact, they openly mock them at every turn.
Well, when they finish, because, Albert Brooks is running around with this big glass jug and Bruno Kirby's character is running after him because he wants him to be
out of breath.
Yeah. And they want to get the footsteps and they get it. And Albert Brooks is so excited because he goes, that's it. We got it. And then they ask the sound guy, what do you think? And the sound guy says, I think you saved the film. and it's with such sarcasm that it is just – it hits deep.
How heavy is that thing George Kennedy is carrying? How heavy does it look to you? Maybe it doesn't weigh anything. Maybe
it's one of those space things.
Maybe it's one of those space things. It doesn't carry anything. And I love that there's another guy who comes in and leans in and goes, funny. Like, he punctuates. Like, these guys are just trying to do their jobs. And, I mean, I'm going to run this clip at the end. It's too funny. But the whole bit about they have to find an audio clip that will match what they've got. Right? And he says, what do we have? Well, we've got the Hulk running. Well, maybe that'll try it. He's like, no, that's going to be too slow. No, he said, get Hulk. Yeah. And he says, well, that's too slow. We have Hulk running. I still think that's going to be too slow. Let's try it. And I love you hear the guy talking to the guy in the back, and he goes, we got to find Hulk on reel 3. And he's like, regular Hulk? No, Hulk running. And then you hear the guy go, oh, God. He's got to go back into some dusty shelf and find the Hulk running thing. So then they plug it in. And you hear the Hulk audio over George Kennedy. And, of course, it's, ah! Albert Brooks is, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, I told you it was too slow. Too slow? The guy's screaming. Well, that's not what it's called. Well, call it the Hulk screaming. That's the effect. Like, oh, my God. Just, like, even the simplest task. And, again, I think the job they do where Albert Brooks and ends up carrying around the water jug. Mm. And they put, and like Robert Cole knows what he's doing. Like, he talks about give me some fill and some low end. Like, he's using all these terms that I don't know. And you see the scene with the new Foley, and you're like, it is better.
Yeah.
It is better. And yet,
he obviously knows what he's doing.
He knows what he's doing. And yet it ends in a feeling of defeat because these guys are just so uninterested in what he has to do. And you're just now, like, when you watch the movie, like, do you feel that those scenes – because those scenes don't really have anything to do with the thread of the movie, which is the relationship. Do you feel like – I mean, they're really funny scenes, so I would never want them removed. And this movie's only 90 minutes, so maybe it was like, you know, we have to kind of pad this out. But I'm kind of interested, like, what is your perception of why we spend so much time away from the relationship? Why do we see so much of him at work?
I think part of what it is like you're saying, to kind of show that Robert is competent. And that he is actually a functioning adult in other aspects of his life. Mm. And because he is in his relationship, Robert kind of creates problems, and in his professional life, problems come to him, but he solves them so quickly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he solves them without any angst. I mean, he makes a couple of, you know, sarcastic comments. He rolls his eyes, but he gets down and he does it, and he fixes it, and he does make it better every time. But he can't do that in his in his everyday life. And I think that contrast is important. And I think it's also important to make. I think without it, Robert would very quickly become unlikable. And I think it's important that he has some redeeming qualities, so that you can kind of see what Mary probably sees in him.
I think that's absolutely right on. And said, I mean, I could watch a whole movie of him just being a film editor. I mean, I find all this stuff fascinating. And then they go to this, I mean, even the scene at that, the end of the scene with the director where he takes Robert out to the parking lot and he's talking about, you know, working on the movie. And he says, hey, I'm throwing a party tonight. Why don't you and Mary come? And he says, oh, well, we just got back together. We're kind of in a mending period. I think we need to spend time alone. Oh, come on, come. Okay. Again, folds immediately. So then we go to the scene in the part, the scene at the Hollywood party, and of course everybody's doing coke,
right?
Which is oh my God, that scene of the guy saying I can drive her home, the cross-eyed guy, that guy, mwah, that perfect, that guy, and just the way Brooks just goes, like, he just completely did, like, so mad at that guy. But there's another moment. Again, he gets to meet George Kennedy, which features that great story about going to the wrong studio. I love that.
Right.
But there's a moment in this scene, a moment in that whole sequence, that features Meadowlark Lemon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for those of you too old, or too young, actually, to remember, Meadowlark Lemon was part of course, the Harlem Globetrotters. And at the time, like, the Harlem Globetrotters were like, I think there was some efforts to try and make them into kind of like movie or TV stars a little, because Meadowlark Lemon had been on sitcoms, and I think he was clearly angling, you know, to kind of like be like one of those, you know, like a Joe Namath type,
right?
You know, like, but, you know, branch out into like an actual acting career. And this scene with Meadowlark Lemon is unbelievable because Meadowlark Lemon takes Albert Brooks aside and he says, "Who's that woman you're with?" And he says, "Well, it's my girlfriend Mary. Why?" And he says, "I gotta say, she is hot. She is really hot." And he moves his hands like he's cupping her breasts in the air. And he makes Meadowlark Lemon look like a sexual predator.
Yeah.
And like the idea that...
And this
like,
is the first time they've met.
Yes. They just met. Completely inappropriate. Totally inappropriate. And just the idea that Meadowlark Lemon would allow himself to be cast like that,
mm-hmm.
because it's completely antithetical to what his image would be, which would be like a kind of family-friendly, you know, you know, sports star slash sitcom actor.
And bucket of confetti, Meadowlark Lemon,
Exactly, the bucket of confetti. And just the fact that Brooks was able to use him in that way, I'm like, I can't believe Meadowlark Lemon went for this. Because it's like, it makes Meadowlark Lemon look like a creep.
Oh, yeah.
An utter creep. And it's just like, I'm just so impressed that Brooks could sell that. I just love it.
And it's a quick little scene. I mean, couple of minutes at most. Mm. And yeah, and Meadowlark Lemon just comes across really skeezy.
Oh, man.
And just, you know, but it kind of goes to what you're saying, too, about how sometimes it seems like Robert is right about the way he's feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, Mary, I don't think, is ever going to cheat on him. But she obviously gets a lot of attention from slimy men.
Yep.
And that, I think, is what scares the hell out of Robert. You know, is that one day she's going to say yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when they go to the Hollywood party and these guys immediately spirit her away into the bathroom to do coke, and he's not part of that. That's I don't know. Maybe I was possessive in my younger relationships, but like that would upset me. Yeah. Watching guys grab my girlfriend and off into the bathroom, that would be upsetting to me. You know, and she even calls him on it because later on. He sort of supposedly makes plans for dinner, and she goes out instead with her banking associates for a big client, and he shows up, which is completely over the line.
Right.
That is where you're like, okay, he is now disappearing into his own madness because you cannot do this. But she says – she lays it right out on the line where she's like, what did you expect to see when you got here? Did you think I was going to take my boss out and give him head right at the table?
Right.
And she's like, I think that's what you think. And it's like, yeah, that is exactly what he thinks. He can't say it, but that's exactly – because he even mentioned – he's like, why are you the only woman? Like, he can't get past that. And that is – I mean, luckily we're near the end of the movie at that point. But yeah, it's like he is pushing way too far. And of course, she falls for it
because
he does the whole thing about let's go away this weekend.
I have a surprise for you, but if you want me to ruin it, okay.
Oh, it's so passive aggressive. Oh, my God. And then
5 minutes later, he tells her, well, there was really no surprise.
Yeah. Oh, if I'm lying, God strike me dead. All right, I was lying, but that's how much I love you. I'm willing to be struck dead. Oh, and then it ends even with another little button where he says, I love you. Mm-hmm. And she says, I know you do. And then he can't help but add, I know you do. I guess that's the same as I love you too. Yeah, sure. Right. He just can't. You're just every little thing. Is going to peck away at this guy. So then, of course, they take their trip to Idlewild, which is this mountainous region, I guess, over in outside of Los Angeles. And even the drive up, to me, has dark portents because, like, he wants it to be the perfect romantic weekend.
Right.
And there's one point where he leans over to kiss her, and she's like, keep your eyes on the road, you know? And he's trying to be – he's like, oh, a kiss is more valuable than life. Don't you think a kiss is more valuable than life? And she just doesn't respond. And it's like he's trying so hard to be romantic. And then he's like, what are you thinking about? And she goes, I'm thinking about the client at the bank.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, that's not the answer he wanted. It's so not the – and I've been there. I've been – you know?
Yeah.
I've been in those moments where you want the person to be thinking a certain way and they're not – and that's hard to take, you know.
Oh, sure.
You're just like, oh, yeah.
Well, you asked me when the first time I saw this. In, you know, like I said, I was very young when I saw it. But the time I saw it that it had an impact on me was I was in college, and in your mind, it just happened.
Right.
But you know, sure. I had gone through a breakup before, and I saw this in the student union theater. And
you saw on a screen.
Yeah, I saw it on a screen at my university's theater, one of their theaters. They used to show, you know, just whatever they could get their hands on, I guess. And I saw this on a large screen at my university. And yeah, through that whole movie, I was like, that's. And I came out feeling like, oh man, I got to get my shit together.
That's a great lesson to come away from any movie, really.
Yeah. You know, and it's I mean, this is, like you said, this if you have to be at a certain point in your life to see this, you know. And at that point, you know, I was just like that. I was angry, and I was obsessive, and I was a raw nerve. I was listening to Violent Femmes on a nonstop, you know, rotation. And so this, you know, this movie, the second time I saw it, caught me at just the right time.
Yeah, like you said, I think if you're in a happy relationship when you see it, you can laugh at Robert from a safe distance. But when you're anywhere near having been in an unhappy relationship, this movie is really gets under your skin. And the final moments, too, where they're in the cabin.
Oh, God, that is so rough.
They go to the cabin, and she says, "Is there a phone in here?" And he's like, no, there's no phone. And she's like, "Oh, I have to call my sister because she's staying at my house, and I didn't tell her to leave the – and let me ask you this. Do you think she's lying? Because we never know.
You know, I want to say no. I don't think so.
Okay.
But at the same time,
you're clearly not confident in your answer.
I'm not confident. I would say that it is 50-50. It's okay. An even 50-50 for me. Right. Because, you know, when she makes that phone call, there's a lot of giggling, and she closes the door of the phone booth because, you know, that's how phone booths worked in the days. And, you know, it doesn't seem like the kind of phone call you would make to your sister.
No, it does not. It does not. And then that's the scene where, because he notices that she's been gone a while. Because, I mean, when she says, "I'm just going to call my sister to tell her where the key is," you're like, well, that's a 2-second phone call. Mm-hmm. And then she's gone a while. He looks out the window, sees her shut the door, which is, again, very ominous if you want to look at it that way.
Right.
And then there is a shot of just Albert Brooks looking out the window. And it is that moment. It is not a comedy. This is The Shining.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it is. And we'll there's a reference to that. We'll come back and play later on. But I mean, that moment, this movie is serious because Robert in that moment is just being eaten away from the inside.
Yeah.
Because he is so upset at seeing, because he knows what he thinks he knows.
Yeah, well, and there's some foreshadowing of that when they're going when they're going to Idlewild, and they're driving through the mountains. The music changes, and it gets very heavy and very dark, and that is not comedy music.
I don't think I've ever even noticed that. I have to watch this again. That's interesting. I've never noticed that.
Mm-hmm. The music completely changes, and it's like you said, it's ominous. And you kind of know that things are going to come to a head once they get there. And I, you know, you're mentioning too what you just said. You know, that's, you know, that Albert Brooks's character is looking at her, and this is how it looks to him. And I kind of wonder if what he's seeing is what's there, or what he's seeing is a heightened view of it through his eyes.
Right. Right.
And I like that. That is never clear either.
Yes. Yeah, so she comes back, and he immediately confronts her about the phone call. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's like, you know, well, you seem happy. Well, I am happy. Well, you seem extra happy after the phone call. What are you talking about? You know, who did you really call? And it's just like, and then it all just spirals out of control. And then, of course, she insists on leaving. She wants to go home. And he decides to, oh, God.
Hold on. Before you say that, I want to point out too that when she, because you're talking about whether or not she was actually calling her sister, he confronts her also about the long distance phone calls. And at first she lies.
She does. That's right.
And then tells him later, oh, it was, you know, we weren't even together yet.
Right.
So that throws more doubt into this whole
thing. Right. Because he first says it was my brother's girlfriend.
Right.
And we know that phone call, because we see him call that number and it's a guy. Mm-hmm. Then he talks. I love the sleazy guy too. He's like, "Yeah, is there a doctor there?" "No, babe, I ski." Like, he's the most oily, unctuous guy. You don't even need to see him; you just know he's a douchebag. But yeah, you're right. She gets cornered in a lie, and she gives you that just that little bit of like, well, maybe Robert's not crazy.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And so after all that, he decides to throw a Hail Mary pass, mm-hmm. and proposes to Mary, and she accepts.
Yes. When that happened, my wife and I were watching it together, and we both said at the same time, "Oh my God," because we just could not believe it. We couldn't believe that he proposed, and we couldn't believe that she accepted.
Now, this is interesting. You said you watched it with the wife. What was her take on this movie? Because this movie was co-written by Albert Brooks and Monica Johnson, which was Albert Brooks' longtime collaborator. They wrote the first four movies together. So, you know, clearly that was a good partnership. But, like, I'm interested in that, you know, this wasn't all just done from a man's point of view. What was your wife's view of the relationship of those two?
I think she kind of felt the way I did. I think she recognized that this was not a good relationship for them to be in, but for whatever reason they couldn't recognize it, or they couldn't get out of each other's orbit. You know, it was just this constant falling into each other, and she laughed. She thought it was a very funny movie, but she also kept kind of tisking and shaking her head a lot,
right?
Because, you know, I think we're both at a point in our life where, you know, we can recognize all the pitfalls that they are creating for themselves.
Yeah.
And I think she also, you know, I think she had the same way I did. I think she had trouble understanding why Mary would keep going back to this, guy, to this relationship.
And the movie ends in a way that Albert Brooks' Real Life and Lost America did, with a post sort of credit, not post credits, but a scroll. And I'm not going to reveal what it says in the scroll, because everybody should – I mean, we've already given away the plot to this movie, but you should see it anyway. But anyway, the scroll, we learn that these two will never be able to separate from one another. Right. And it is funny, but it is also really dark.
Yeah.
Because then he brings the song back in, You Are So Beautiful comes back in after we saw it in the opening credits, and now we're seeing it at the end. And it really gives the movie this – dark, dark ending, even though while it is really funny. And just that tightrope that he was able to walk. And that is why I am just so, like, relentless in saying this movie is a masterpiece. It is just a tiny little masterpiece, because I just – so hard to pull that off, to make something laugh out loud funny while also having essential truths about life and being dark. It's just unbelievable. And this movie had no less a fan – than Stanley Kubrick.
Oh, wow.
Because apparently later on, Stanley Kubrick started sending faxes to Albert Brooks, because this is pre-email. And he talked to Albert Brooks and basically said to Albert Brooks, how did you get this movie made? Because to him, the movie is about jealousy. It's not about love. It's about jealousy. And he himself could not get that movie made. And he was in a wonder that Albert Brooks got it made. So, I mean, good Lord, when you're getting compliments from Stanley Kubrick saying, how did you get that movie made?
Yeah,
that's a compliment.
Well, and you know, a lot of Albert Brooks's movies, I wonder how he got them made, because they are nothing like any other movies, even today, and they certainly weren't anything like the movies that were in theaters at the time. You know, it's amazing that he got these movies made and put into theaters, and that he found an audience. And I think also this movie is the prototype for every postmodern rom-com that came after. You know, as you watch it, you can kind of see, you know, you can see, oh, they use this scene and there's something about Mary, and oh, they use this scene and When Harry Met Sally, and you know, you can kind of pull these scenes out, and you can see how this movie was an inspiration for a lot of things that came afterward, and they're still being made today.
I hope it was. I mean, I hope. I get the feeling this is one of these movies that within the Hollywood community, everyone's seen it. It's just the average person still hasn't seen it. And, you know, unfortunately, the Albert Brooks movies came to Netflix, but they disappeared like 2 months later. So this movie was available on Netflix for a while, but now it's not. You can rent it on iTunes. You can buy it. I mean, if you like smart comedies, I don't think you can go wrong with this movie. And I've never met anybody who has seen this movie that doesn't like it. I know lots of people who haven't seen it, but the minute somebody sees it, they're like, this movie is the killer one. And like I said, I like all five of his first five movies, but this to me is the crowning achievement of his directorial writing career.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So yeah, it's modern romance. It's not for the faint of heart. But it's also really, really, really funny. And so, you know, Max, we're men. I'm glad we could have a bond about this movie. So thank you so much for coming on to talk about it, man. I was looking so forward to talking. I always look forward to talking to you. I was looking forward to talking about this movie, and it gave me an opportunity to watch the movie again. And not that I need one, but it was a nice excuse to watch it again. So thanks so much for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And anytime you want to talk about Albert Brooks, let me know.
We got a couple more. There's a couple more to do. So There's even more misery awaiting Albert Brooks' characters. So where can people find you on the internet?
People can find me at my Plastic Man blog, which is itsplasticman.wordpress.com. They can also find me at greatcaesarspost.com, and they can find me at Max Romero on Twitter, Facebook, and other dark parts of the web.
Wow. 4chan. There's like Reddit, Threads. It's all dark stuff.
Really, it's just Instagram.
Let's stay clean. Let's just say it's Instagram. Excellent. Yes, of course, you can find episodes of this show and all our other great shows on the network, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. And we can talk about the movie over on Twitter, which is at Film and Water Pod. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Go see Modern Romance. Go find it. It's worth it. And until next week, that's a wrap.
What do you think?
I think what you've got is fine.
No, I know, but the director hates it. So what can we do?
What do you want to do?
Well, I want to get some kind of pounding, some kind of noise when he's coming through that corridor, like he's running hard and heavy. Pounding, I guess, is what I want. Pounding. Do you have any stock stuff that's good?
Why don't you try to put in the Hulk?
Yeah, we should hear that. That could work.
Let's try the Hulk.
The Hulk's too slow.
Well, we have Hulk running, don't we?
Hulk running. Let's try that.
Even running is too slow.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's try it. Maybe we'll get lucky, okay?
Put up the Incredible Hulk on effects number 3.
What do you want, Buzz? Standard Hulk?
No, Hulk running.
Oh, no.
Take a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's going to find it.
Oh, I bet he does. He always seems to eventually.
We got a break now?
Hmm.
Okay, I'm going to go to my car, right? I'll be back in a minute.
Want a cup of coffee?
Please.
Let's hear what this sounds like.
All right.
I think it's a waste of time.
Good. We'll see it.
Okay, let's go.
Oh, hold, 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 hold it, hold it, hold, hold, hold it.
Killer projector?
What is that?
I told you, it's too slow.
Too slow? Forget that. The guy's screaming.
Didn't say that. It said Hulk running.
Well, write in Hulk screaming. That's the effect.
Sorry.